Now, there is so much waste methane that you could literally, if you manage to hook up an ASIC to every flare in the world, you would completely end greenhouse gas emissions from methane, and you'll be able to power a Bitcoin network 10 times its current size.
Is Elon Musk just a troll, or is he just bored? And, you know, how much more time and energy, intellectual capacities do we have to waste, you know, on all this FUD, fear, uncertainty, doubt that's been spread around? So I'm really looking forward to my talk with Hess McCook, also known as Fry Hess on Twitter. Make sure you read his brilliant article where he dissects and analyzes Elon Musk's misunderstanding, to make a understatement here, but it's breaking down Elon Musk's misunderstanding about Bitcoin, and where, you know, Tesla, they announced they no longer accept Bitcoin as a payment, and Elon Musk displays definitely a poor understanding of Bitcoin's energy use. So without further ado, this is my talk with Hess McCook, and let me know if you have any questions. Share with your friends and family. Make sure you follow me and Hess McCook on Twitter. Subscribe, please, to my YouTube channel and podcast platform. And if you have any questions, any suggestions for future panel discussions or interviews, talks, just let me know. My DMs are open. My email address is kd@kvandavani.com. I'm the host of the Kevan Davani Connection Show. Hope you're going to enjoy. And we are live. Welcome to the show. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing very good. Good to be back. Love being on your show as always.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while. It's so good, man, to, you know, to read some stuff by you, and it's amazing what kind of content you've put out lately. So, you've went on Nick Carter's show. That was a brilliant interview. And I thought we can go into some more nuances or some questions that I might have or other listeners might have. Why don't you just start off, Hess? What was the motivation for that article? Was it?
So, go ahead. So obviously, as you said, it's been a while. I've been a bit busy, you know, with other things, and you know, like, to be honest, like, I thought the debate was now in good hands. So, like, I never, like, you know, thought I'd have to be dragged, you know, back into the trenches. But it is wartime out here on the ESG front and all fronts, I suppose. So I'm back. Obviously, the main motivator was the very, very disappointing behavior and statements of Elon Musk. And I said, you know, that's it. It's time to get back into the trenches.
Yeah. So, Hess, what is it? To be honest with you, I can't take Elon Musk seriously anymore. I'm not sure, you know, his intentions, his motivations. Fact is, he is a Cantillion insider. He's massively profiting from, you know, this central banking, you know, zero or negative interest rate credits. He's massively subsidized by governments, a military-industrial complex. It's just a fact. And, of course, he's massively profiting off from these so-called carbon credits. Do you want to start off with that, with the background, with the factual background of Elon Musk's position, or how do you want to go along?
So, he didn't really say, you know, many factual things. It was mostly, like, non-factual. Which does make you think. So in the piece I wrote about Elon, I concluded, like, you know, with the statement, like, I don't think we'll ever know or understand, like, why he would say such things. Basically what he said is, like, you know, like, so incorrect and misinformed that somebody, like, with that frame of mind or understanding of Bitcoin, there is no way they would gamble $1 billion of their company's money into such a venture. So he made heaps of just, you know, sweeping, just incorrect statements. So, you know, is it, you know, Elon misunderstanding Bitcoin. Like it's hard to say. So effectively, you know, I don't take him seriously anymore. I think he's cost a lot of people a lot of money. He hasn't cost me anything. But there'll be a lot of like you know, mostly poor people who bought high and you know, as soon as they heard from Elon, sold low. We saw a lot of that in the on-chain statistics and behaviors, that a lot of the selling that occurred like during, you know, the last retracement has been just from new weak-handed small buyers. So as a man of the people, he did very wrong by the people. Secondly, you know, Tesla, like at one point, at its highest point, you know, a few months ago, before its, you know, shares came back to reality, was worth as much as all of the car companies in the world put together. And Toyota makes more Corollas, and you know, Volkswagen makes more Golfs, so just one car model from one brand, than all of Tesla per year. So Tesla is not a car company. Tesla is an energy company. So when the CEO of an energy company comes out with complete misinformation and misunderstanding of just how energy works, like it just can't be true. It has to be a posturing of some sort, probably, you know, political posturing, related to a lot of, you know, the free handouts he gets from the federal government, all of the carbon credits and whatnot. So the way it works currently is, you know, like in America, for example, like you have to have an emission-free vehicle in your fleet, like to be sold like in any state, or you can buy the, you know, credits from an EV manufacturer and you're allowed to sell whatever you want. So a lot of you know, Tesla's revenue comes from, you know, GM and Ford and whatnot, you know, buying up these credits. Eventually the, you know, the tap will close on these credits because all of the car manufacturers now are making EVs as well. And I think, you know, Tesla's future dominance will lie in the energy game. So that, having said that, and being a major participant in the energy game, like, how can you not differentiate between, you know, carbon intensity in different grids? So, for example, he says, you know, like Bitcoin uses just uses too much coal. Well, you know, how much coal is too much? Like in terms of carbon intensity, Bitcoin is far lower than both USA and China, which is where most Teslas are sold. So if those grids are clean enough to charge electric cars, why aren't they clean enough for Bitcoin? And what does it need to be clean enough? Does it need to be 80% renewable, 100, or is 50 okay? You know, Bitcoin's currently at 39%. Apparently, 39%, you know, is not okay enough. Even though, you know, it beats the US grid, which is only 20%. And the world average grid, which is 29%. So if 20% and 29% are good enough for your shitty cars, but 39% is not good enough for Bitcoin, how much is good enough for Bitcoin? And this is why, when you were telling me earlier, you know, when we were having a think about what to call this episode, you know, ending environmental FUD once and for all, I told you, unfortunately, never once and for all, never ever. Like, this FUD will come back forever. Because when Bitcoin hits 50, they'll say 50, not enough, needs to be 70. Bitcoin hits 70, not enough, needs to be 90. You know, Bitcoin hits 100, well, I don't like Bitcoin, it's useless to me. You know, they just need to turn Bitcoin off. So like, what's more important in the debate and like trying to get the narrative of, like narrative advanced, is to like not try to not fight these people on their battlefield, and just try to really narrow down into like the definition of scope.
You know, from in my view, there's a differentiation. You know, there's a default argumentation when it comes to the CO2 emissions, and I don't know. I mean,
I'm sorry, but I got to break this to the people. You know, climate always changes. And if climate change, or also known previously as global warming, I'm not going to, you know, let's not go even go there. But I'm just saying that it's a climate industrial complex. I think it should be called climate carbon credit CO2 industrial complex. That's what it should be called. And the rest, is definitely a valid basis for argumentation, whether that be environmental pollution or, you know, environmental damages. We can all agree on that. I think, you know, we need to, you know, lower the environmental damages or reduce as much as possible, create technologies that make these environmental damages as minimum as possible. I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I'll meet you most of the way there on that one. But we should debate CO2 as well. But further than CO2, we need to discuss greenhouse gas emissions.
Like methane, so, like CH4.
Exactly. So methane, F gases, nitrous oxides. So, for example, one molecule of methane, can make anywhere between 50 and 200 times the impact, greenhouse impact, of CO2, depending on the time frame, you're analyzing, whether it's effects after 25 years, effects after 100 years, whatever. But in all of the world's greenhouse gas emissions, CO2 only makes up for 80% of that. The other 20 being methane, the nitrous oxides, and the F gases. Now, there is so much waste methane that you could literally, if you manage to hook up an ASIC to every flare in the world, you would completely end greenhouse gas emissions from methane, and you'll be able to power a Bitcoin network 10 times its current size. And in that case, you're actually greenhouse negative. So if we get Bitcoin to 100% renewable, they say, you know what? Not enough. It has to be negative 100% offset. So the debate will never end, but it's important that we zone in on the, because the debate is multi-scoped, with greenhouse gas emissions being a big one. And you'll notice they never say greenhouse gas emissions. They just say CO2. Because Bitcoin may very well eventually become carbon negative. Because if you save one molecule of methane and burn that into Bitcoin, you've saved 50 molecules of CO2. So not only can Bitcoin be powered purely on renewable, it can actually reduce the world's waste. So the CO2 debate is lost automatically in its tracks. So Bitcoin doesn't need to emit CO2 to produce Bitcoin. It can actually consume methane.
And we have the technology. I mean, it's a simple technology, right? We just need to, use up those these.
Oh, there's a surprising amount of it. Sure, it's not much yet. But I'd say about 0.5% to 1% of Bitcoin's hash rate probably comes from the oil and gas field. Between Crusoe and Greater American Mining and Steve Barber's operation upstream, they'll push through a couple of hundred thousand cubic feet of methane a day. So they're probably generating 0.5% to 1% of the Bitcoin's power is probably coming from the oil field. And I can see, I was saying on Nick's show the other day, I can see that being a quarter, over the next 5 years. The main bottleneck now is getting rigs out to the wells. There's wells wherever you go, all around the world. Like the amount of methane, you know how they say you gotta spend money to make money. Well, you gotta flare fossil fuels to make fossil fuels. So about 3 or 4% of everything that gets pulled out of the ground needs to get flared. It just used to get vented, but that was so bad for the environment. Everyone, you know, flares now. Some people are moving towards, you know, flare reduction technologies, and there's a goal to have, you know, zero flaring on Earth by 2030. And like, there's no way to achieve that really, unless, Bitcoin steps in.
Yeah, these are really astonishing numbers and data you've published in your article on Bitcoin Magazine.
So for the listeners, you can just pop over to Bitcoin Magazine. If you check out like my author page, you'll see everything I've got up there recently. I've got a little guest writing gig going at Bitcoin Magazine, so I'll probably once every couple of weeks be putting out a nice big long busting piece. The next article in the series will be Bitcoin versus the military industrial complex. So my history at Bitcoin Magazine has been like quite interesting from an article history point of view. So the first article was, you know, I really hate comparisons and we really shouldn't be making comparisons, and you know, Bitcoin needs to stand on its own. And then the second article was F it. Here's a comparison of Bitcoin versus the banks. And then ripped into Elon for the third one a little bit. But as I said, each of my articles is chock full of data. I believe on average, you know, there's 40 to 50 links, you know, per article. Like the run rate is, you know, one link, one reference per 50 words. So a lot of data out there. And, you know, with that much information out there, so easy to find. Like there's no way Elon Musk like believes what he's saying.
Do you think he's pretending to be that? I mean, not knowledgeable or not comprehending, or is he just trolling around? I'm not sure.
I think he's trolling. Last week he's like, yeah, okay, we met with the miners and Michael Saylor, and like it looks like it's going to be okay. Like this is a behavior you maybe expect from like the high school kids.
Yeah, it shows a lot of, I don't know, some kind of image, not mature. Bored. Is he just bored because of his, I don't know.
But for example, like I'm bored all the time and I troll and I shit post on Twitter and all of that, but I don't have like, the financial fate of like hundreds of thousands of people like tied to my behavior.
Yeah, not only hundreds, but they actually have 40, 50 million followers. So, you know, the damages, the consequential damages he's incurring is just beyond, I think, his comprehension. You know, people in developing countries, Venezuela, hyperinflationary countries. I mean, these are people that are, you know, struggling for existence, for survival, you know.
So, like I said, we will never know. Like, I don't see him as a, maybe because like I'm biased. I did used to be a bit of like an Elon fanboy, but like I don't believe the guy that's at least managed the delivery of SpaceX. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's just pretend he doesn't know anything about rocket science. He doesn't know anything about math. He's stupid. As the manager that put it all together, at the same time Neuralink and at the same time Tesla. Like I do not believe that he's not across this data.
This is what I'm saying.
The CEO of an energy company not knowing what at least the carbon mix of the US grid is.
Right.
Forget about the world grid. You operate. No, Tesla has a power plant in South Australia. So the biggest Tesla battery install at utility scale is here in Australia. So it's a global energy company. How does he not understand the global grid and energy curtailment? And like, he's the CEO of effectively like, you know, one of the biggest energy companies in the world. If you compare it to, you know, other, you know, energy companies like Exxon and whatnot, Tesla was almost there at the size. It was top 10 largest companies in the world at one point.
Look, I mean, to be honest, I mean, let's go back to the hard data and core, but let's just discuss this for a minute. This is what I'm saying. Elon, I mean, I'm not trying to downplay his creative, whatever innovation spirit, whatever he's got, on his mind. I'm sure he's got, but I mean, just look at the facts. I mean, even PayPal, I mean, how much did it really contribute to the success of PayPal, right? He was, I think, it was all like bought off or with Peter Thiel, and then it was sort of a something in between a company, and then once they got successful, and so it's not really, he can't really. I'm not sure whether he can be really proud of his entrepreneurial successes, and that's what I'm saying. I'm always have to emphasize that Elon Musk is heavily subsidized, heavily into the military industrial complex, and I'm sure that's why a lot of things he cannot talk about, because that's whatever under national security or confidentiality or whatsoever. So I don't think it's a lot, it's not much of a challenge to build up these, these images, whether it be Neuralink, SpaceX, or what have you.
Well, someone who's watching live right now, my old mate Bill Burton, we had a little a thrashing out of ideas and brainstorming on possible motives. It could be that Elon just wants to, quote unquote, fix Bitcoin. So a solution for him could be to like copy paste the Lightning Network, call it Tesla Coin. Backed by Bitcoin, obviously, because it's a second layer, but all of the nodes are run by Tesla. So it's not decentralized. It's a centralized Tesla chain. So almost, obviously, like Liquid is a federation. So there's like plenty of people in the federation. Tesla could just be centralized, create a currency where, Tesla vehicles can, speak with each other and pay each other, and you can buy Tesla merch and all of that kind of whatnot. And you can settle it into Bitcoin. But while you're on the Tesla network, you'll be using good old quality green energy Tesla tokens. So that could be like another theory, whereas he's saying, because he said we're keeping the Bitcoin, we're just not going to use it until it's environmentally friendly to do so.
Okay, but that's a nice vision. It's a nice vision, and it sounds to me, to be honest with you, realistically speaking, very utopian, because the way you'd have to like overtake Bitcoin in terms of all its properties, would it be natural
Oh,
emergence,
no.
the
So
network effect. What do you mean? I'm sorry.
I'm not talking about it overtaking Bitcoin. I'm saying it's Bitcoin.
Okay.
So we trade sats on Lightning. You have LBTC on Liquid, and you'll have Tesla token on the Tesla network. And like it just settles into Bitcoin. But when you're a Tesla owner and you're buying Tesla, it'll be like the currency of the Tesla ecosystem, run on central Tesla servers, which are green and powered by solar energy. But it's actual money because it's a second layer of Bitcoin.
And you think that technologically and from the infrastructure point of view,
I think he'd be able to. I think like it's not a decent, like it's a fully centralized, you never know. I'm sure one of these days in the future, all of these big ecosystems, Apple, like they will have their own money. It's just whether or not it'll be backed by real money, and it's a second layer Bitcoin solution, or it'll just be a bullshit shitcoin. And it'll be money for the ecosystem. If you hold like the Apple token, like certain benefits will accrue to you when you shop with Apple or whatever it is. It'll have to be centralized if he wants it to be green. And like people that don't care about using centralized currencies, which I'd say would be 99% of Tesla customers, would be happy for their Tesla to use Tesla token to pay for like autonomous driving features. Or whatever. Like it's something that could be done in the future, and something that Elon might be trying to sow the seeds for. I think he's the kind of guy that needs to bring a solution to what he thinks is a problem. So Bitcoin doesn't have any problems at the moment. Elon Musk thinks it has a problem. So he has to invent a solution for this problem and say, here, I invented this for you. You know, use it.
So he's got this solution.
I think that's a very important thing for people like Elon Musk. So I do not fear the guy like trying to hijack or take down Bitcoin. I don't take him seriously. And like, if he wants to offer a fix for all of that, you know, 10x transaction throughput for, you know, none of the energy, he should just make himself a centralized layer 2 on top of Bitcoin.
This would be the most realistic, you know, approach, like to have a second layer. I mean, it's already evolving so fast, the Lightning Network, and why is he not, you know, sitting down with serious people like you or other people, you know, who know what they're doing, who know that the data, who know the technology, who know how to, you know, convert this technology into something usable. This is something that boggles my mind, to be honest with you.
Yeah, likewise. And you know, Lightning Labs like used to live down the street from him. Like, I think they've moved now to Austin, I think, Tesla. But like Lightning Labs was I believe in San Fran, right next to Tesla HQ. He could just go in there and say, here's $10 million. I need you to copy paste everything like you guys have done and just make it run on one big node, which I'm going to connect some solar panels to. And it'll be done in an afternoon.
Did you hear about that other car manufacturer in Daytona? What is it called in Canada?
Yeah, there was the Indy. Oh, yes. So there was a Daytona 500 Indy. Not the Daytona 500, sorry. The Indy 500 race. But in Canada, there is an EV company. I just saw the headline. I didn't read anything about it. But the headline said, you know, it can mine while it's driving or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, I don't know actually how it works, but you need quite a bit of energy to like mine Bitcoin these days. Like, I don't know how many Satoshis you'll actually be pulling up on your drive to work. You'll be lucky to maybe get 2 or 3 Satoshis, I reckon.
Okay. So, the notes, I mean, I don't know how much you want to talk about, because I know, you hate this compared, but you still, you know, you sat down, you elaborated on all the data and you sent me your notes, you know, on the comparison between, you know, what kind of, you know, emission the military industrial complex produces. So it's really eye opening. So, I don't know. Do you want to, I think this could be really eye opening for a lot of people, because people have no idea how much, you know, especially, you know, the environmental damages that military industrial complex and the consequential damages, you know, years and decades after. I think can it be calculated at all, or how easy is that?
So I've looked, actually, there is I was both positively and alarmingly surprised about how much the Army actually reports. So they give a lot of data. When you're assessing greenhouse gas emissions, there are like 3 scope elements. So scope 1 is basically, my scope 1 emissions, like of this conversation, will be the electricity that my laptop is using. Basically, that's the energy I'm consuming. That's the scope 1 emissions. My scope 2 emissions is like I'm sitting in a room which has got the lights on, and like that's giving out, using up energy. Scope 3 is the design and construction of my entire house, all of the fuel that was used in all of the equipment that built the house, the silicon in my laptop. So once you include scope 3, numbers really start to blow out and get realistic. Why aren't scope 3 items calculated? Usually, like, it's very hard. It requires like a lot of work, a lot of rationalizations. It's just easier to calculate, you know, how much we paid for electricity. That's our footprint like how much electricity we used. What else? Oh, you got to get me back on topic. I've lost my trail of thought.
No, I just wanted to know.
That's right. The scope three emissions. So most governments will report their scope one and two emissions of the military. So the scope one and two emissions of just the U.S. military, the Department of Defense reports on it. Very, very detailed. How many barrels, how many million barrels of jet fuel they use, how many million barrels of diesel, Navy oil. They catalog everything it costs to run an aircraft carrier, but nothing about the design and construction and disposal of the aircraft carrier. So the total emissions of the Department of Defense operating is 60 megatons of carbon per year. Bitcoin is 50. The Pentagon building by itself is 20.
Mind-boggling. This is really
But the Pentagon building, like, you don't see all of it. A lot of it is underground. But in terms of square meters of office space, the Pentagon's the biggest building in the world. Like, by far.
Crazy.
So it uses a lot of energy here. You know, some people find Bitcoin wasteful. I find the Pentagon wasteful. But I digress. So the scope three, what scope three consists of is the military industrial complex. So some researchers have done like extensive research on this, and it was all based on, you know, how many people the military industrial complex employs, how many factories do they have. And in the USA, the military industrial complex employs 14% of all industry. So the US Army contributes 60 megatons. The industrial complex tacks on about another 300 per year. So all up, on average, and this is about the same for most armies except the US, because of the US Navy and their control of the skies and the seas, they have to use a lot more jet fuel than everyone else. But it's estimated all up that in a cold year, and by cold, I don't mean the weather is cold. I mean, not active war. You got about like 5% of the world's emissions are due to the army and military industrial complex. In a hot war, and especially hot years, like when you saw Iraq-Iran war, Kuwait in the Gulf War, when you had oil fields that were on fire for 3 to 4 months at a time, that's another 1% of global emissions. So in a cold year, 5% goes to the military industrial complex. And in a hot year, it's 6%. Bitcoin is currently 0.1%.
Yeah, I think.
And trending towards zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, if people just understood, like, if that all that energy would have been or could be allocated to real productive use, you know, for civilian use, for, you know, innovation, for what real, like, prosperity and abundance for society, it's mind-boggling, to be honest with you. It's really mind-boggling. So I think, but it's a good comparison, to be honest with you. I think it's one of the best comparisons because it shows, like, the usefulness of Bitcoin. Like, what does Bitcoin eventually, you know, the cascading positive effects that it will produce in the years and decades to come is unfathomable.
But look, I understand when people say, like, it's a long bow, like, to draw. But, like, I want to, like, try to meme this idea out there that, like Bitcoin is a full stack PPE solution. Politics, philosophy, economics. It provides a framework of all three for anyone who decides to be a user. So if Bitcoin is a full PPE stack, you have to compare it to the legacy PPE stack, which is the combination of banking, finance, and insurance, government, and the military. So I will be having a look at what governments use. I do have a scope to make it fair. I will just be doing like a mandatory government functions. So I won't be counting healthcare emissions because not every government provides healthcare. Right. But basically looking at government in terms of like a absolute mandatory essential functions, there's actually a UN like labor scope for that. And like the mandatory government sector, including defense, employs 4.1% of the world's workforce.
Astonishing, yeah.
So they want to come talk to me about waste, like Bitcoin is a waste. I don't know.
No, but somebody's got to do the calculation. I think it's really super valuable what you're doing. So I hope that, you know, at least in the decision making levels, would it be whatever legislative levels or I don't know, people like, you know, who have ethos, who have ethical principles, like Rand Paul or Ron Paul, you know, these people or Cynthia Lummis, you know, who are hardcore Bitcoiners now. I hope they, you know, they can exert that influence with the data now they, you know, that other experts like you have produced, and sit down, you know, and deliver results, data, hardcore data, and you know, convincing arguments, and in order
you know,
to.
I think actually Cynthia Lummis has already started to flex her muscle, a little. And that's basically like she's doing that through like incentives for mining.
Mm-hmm.
That's I think if you know politicians like get their thinking caps on, I think they're going to warm to this industry very, very quickly. Especially politicians in states that have a lot of oil and gas.
Yeah. Let me screen share this article again of Bitcoin Magazine where you know also talk about the renewables. Can you just check for a second your microphone? I'm not sure whether I'm the only one who hears your sound a little bit dampened. What kind of microphone are you using? Is that your?
I'm using the AirPods.
Oh, that's why. Okay, because it's pretty dampened. No problem. I mean, I can hear you, but I'm just, you know, for the listeners. So let me go to this article where you say, you know, where you elaborate on that, you know, on this announcement, which Elon Musk had done, you know, Tesla had suspended vehicle purchases using Bitcoin. We're concerned about rapidly increasing use of fossil fuels for Bitcoin mining and transactions, especially coal, which has the worst emission of any fuel. And then you righteously say, you know, I have two words for you, Mr. Musk, prove it. Prove that the use of fossil fuels for Bitcoin mining is rising. Unfortunately for everyone, this is. Now, what my question is, because you say here, you know, you have a source, the Cambridge Center Alternative Finance estimates that 76% of all miners use renewable energies as part of the mix, with between 29 and 39% of all energy. Now, I can imagine it's hard to assess like the precise number, but is like 29% the minimum and 39% like the maximum average?
Yeah. So like most of their work, I should ask them about it actually. So they refer to 39%, you know, throughout their report, they calculate it, they show the mix, and then later on they assume it's 29%. I'd say probably 39% during like the wet season and 29% during the not wet season.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But that seasonality will go now that, you know, China has apparently banned mining.
Right.
So all of that mining will go to greener pastures.
Right. As you mentioned China now, do you see in the very foreseeable future that Bitcoin mining becomes, you know, exponentially more decentralized because, you know, of all the whatever Bitcoin mining bans or energy, you know, policies that, you know, Chinese miners gonna go with their mining units to whatever, to more Bitcoin mining friendly countries like Canada, USA?
Well, if they're gonna get banned, they're definitely gonna leave, and they'll basically just go wherever power is cheapest. Very easy, very agile. You can literally put your, rigs in a container and ship them. You can be anywhere in the world in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's a huge advantage. See, yeah.
So if it's within the same country, you can do a relocation over a weekend. Half a day to pack, a day to move, half a day to unpack.
That's so much flexibility, right? And efficiency.
So yeah, but even if you're in China and an opportunity came up in Costa Rica, you load up in a container, it's down at the port, 8 days later, it's in Costa Rica at the port, drive it out, you'll have a 10-day turnover. So probably at worst, anywhere in the world, you can relocate a mining operation in a maximum of 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is going to be really a very fast process. That's my opinion. The deployment and the efficient usage of wasted, of otherwise wasted, flared gas or what have you. Just pack up your unit, move, and just plug it in again. I mean, what do you need? You just need an internet connection, satellite connection, whatever you need, right?
Yeah, and it's becoming exceedingly cheap. So hat tip to Elon Musk and Starlink, you can get solid internet basically anywhere in the world that you are. You just have to buy a dish for a couple of $100.
Yeah, and you have super high band.
Oh yeah, it's very high bandwidth. And what you'd need is basically you need a decent size, electrical feed, and just a concrete hard stand.
Right.
I don't think people really actually comprehend how many miners you can fit in a little container. So in a standard, 20-foot shipping container, you can probably get 600 rigs in there. 600 times, 3 kilowatts per rig, you've got 1.8 megawatts in one container. So you probably only need 500 containers full of ASICs parked at the doorstep of a nuclear power plant.
Yeah.
And they would use up all of that power 24/7.
Yeah.
You have a customer for life out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. The sad part about nuclear technology is that it has this negative connotation. It has this negative image because of all this, brainwashing.
Eco-terrorism.
Yeah, not only that, it's it's all preoccupied with this image of nuclear and thermonuclear and hydrogen bombs, and it's all negative, But I mean, I'm sure there's super advanced, civilian use of nuclear technology out there. Would it be? I think even France has a very advanced nuclear technology, or Russia, or other countries. It doesn't matter, any other country, but they just need to develop it and scale it up. But unfortunately, they're shutting more and more down.
Look, there's enough there's enough waste methane out there to power the green revolution.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to mention in your article.
Because energy companies are going to stay as energy companies. But in the future they'll change their fuel mix. But if they can turn their waste into money, they can change their fuel mix quicker.
Right. Yeah, this is the part where it really shocked me positively. Where you say, Elon Musk clearly knows that methane has over 50 times the greenhouse gas effect as carbon dioxide, and surely knows that there are now miners who use waste methane to mine Bitcoin, such as upstream data and Great American Mining and so forth. And yeah, and I think, were you talking just about the U.S., the methane production? That it can power it Bitcoin is. More than 10 times over?
Yeah. So in America, I think America could power Bitcoin on its own, but if you include the world's flaring, 10 times over. Because like I said, you gotta spend money to make money. You gotta spend gas to make gas, And even though America like produces a lot of oil and gas, like they're small if you compare Saudi Arabia, Russia, like the gas, like the O&G giants. Like America makes up, oh no, look, proportionally, America probably makes up for about 10% of the flaring, mm-hmm. of the world's flaring.
Okay.
If they know what's good for them, like every single flare pipe will have a, should have a Bitcoin rig sticking out the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to this nuclear issue. Do you think, eventually, as it scales up, the Bitcoin mining incentivizes the further development and the usage of nuclear technology and nuclear energy?
Yes, but it's going to require extreme like bravery and heroism, because like a nuclear plant like would not be cheap. So you'd be starting off with a capital outlay of at least $10 billion to get a gigawatt of energy. But this energy is like clean. And it's 24/7. People don't want to live near it. Understandable. So you just build it really far away. And right next to it, you just build a flat concrete slab and put 3,000 containers there. And then you have customers for life, literally forever. For hundreds of years, you have customers forever. But the risk is maybe like Bitcoin might not be there forever. So then you have to, extend the grid out from the middle of nowhere into the city because no one wants to live near a nuclear power plant. But a pension fund that needs like, solid, consistent asset liability matching and payout for its clients, a nuclear power plant is a money printer, basically. Nice, consistent cash flows, 24/7. And as the, as the rigs get better and better, you can probably fit much more hash rate into a smaller space. Even the concrete slab wouldn't need to be that big.
That's amazing. So, Hass, is there anything? I think you should go more on podcasts and have panel discussions with other experts or other Bitcoiners. So, I guess you're going to do that.
I am making myself available.
Yeah.
So no, it's time to get back into it. Like I fell out of the swing of things for a little while, but yeah, it's everybody. Like unfortunately, this is one of those things where everybody in the community has to be like armed to fight the narrative. So it's very very important that everyone gets an idea of just the scope of world energy. I remember a long time ago, maybe it was on John Vallis's show, almost 2 years ago, that Bitcoin is an energy play, not a finance play. Exactly. I might have even said it on Nick's show. Mm-hmm. So it's equally important that everyone understands world energy, like in conjunction with Austrian economics. Mm-hmm. And, obviously the code and all that kind of stuff. But just getting, you don't have to become an expert on world energy. Just get an idea of just the scope of like what's going on in aggregate around the world. Clarify your terms. So CO2 versus GHG is a key one. Making sure not to mix up energy with electricity, because a lot of hundreds of millions of people live life without electricity, but they all have energy. And it's the same with Bitcoin. Bitcoin doesn't need electricity. It's nice to have electricity, but it doesn't need electricity. You give me a methane pipe, I can get you some Bitcoins. It just needs energy. So that's another one to not get confused. And finally, energy use is fine. Like we've only made advances in civilization because of our energy use.
Exactly.
It's the emissions that are bad. It's the waste that's bad. And Bitcoin helps cut emissions and waste. So yeah, it uses electricity, but it's not as dirty as you might think.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I mean, I think it's really ridiculous that after all these years and so much hardcore data and publications and discussions and, you know, solid arguments, we're still discussing, you know, the all this energy we have to, you know, trying to debunk or to what do you call it, to bust all this energy FUD or all this FUD, you know, in general around Bitcoin. And it's a little bit saddening after what, 12, 13 years of Bitcoin. You know, it's already so much data, so much, you know, arguments put on the table. It's a little bit saddening. You know, instead of focusing on you know, on the midterm or long-term vision and goals, what we can achieve with Bitcoin, you know. So to zoom out a little bit, to wrap this up, do you have any other thoughts to share, like geopolitically, macroeconomically, or in terms of auto DCA? Where is the price going? How much what's the potential of manipulating the Bitcoin price with all these, you know, artificial derivative products, the futures products, or what have you?
So what I can say about auto DCA is if you're not already doing it, get onto it ASAP. If you are already doing it, just also note that this is a very rare time in history that like Bitcoin is under the 200-day moving average. And traditionally, these are where like the fortunes are made. So if your budget can wear it, double your daily auto DCA. Until we're back up over the 200, and then you can dial it back if you need to. But slow and steady always wins the race. If you have a look at people who bought a lump sum on January 1st versus the people that have been buying daily, like the numbers are about the same.
Yeah, you know
And
that.
the numbers will always be about the same. It just maybe just doesn't feel like it. Like when the price is ripping up, but just chip away every day, and I promise you get there.
Yeah, but there's still a lot of people that, you know, that used to say, "Oh, I'm gonna buy when it's going slower," but once it's lower, then, you know, they have all kinds of other excuses. The psychology of human beings is really interesting, you know. So
Oh, look.
when it goes back to 100 or two, or when it finally reaches 100, 200 in fiat terms, then you know, we'll see, you know.
You know, I've been guilty of that. Look, we all have it. All Bitcoiners learn eventually, some the easy way, some the hard way. I unfortunately had to learn the hard way early on, but now that there's, you know, us to be here for you guys, like as a community, like you do not have to learn these lessons the hard way. We've done the learning on your behalf. So slow and steady, like, wins the race. You know, especially in times like this when we're below like a major long-term average, I usually don't believe in technical analysis. But being, you know, an energy guy, a nature guy, I always like Bitcoin will always return, like will naturally return to its mean. And it'll go over it and it'll go under it, and its mean is heading in a upwards direction. So now that we're under the 200-day mean, if you can afford to be a bit more aggressive in your auto DCA budget, it's a good time. It's a good time to up it.
What's your price prediction until the next halving, or shortly after the next halving, 2024?
So an earlier prediction of mine was on block 700,000, which is very soon, actually, which is in about 3 months or so. And this is a year and a half old prediction, way before COVID even, when Tone Vase was in Sydney visiting us. So maybe mid to late 2019. I said 70,000 US by block 700,000. And I think I'm probably going to be right, actually. So we're block 685,000 or something right now. Let me check the time. I don't have a block clock yet.
Me neither. I'd love to have
It's
one.
on,
My
yeah,
girlfriend
me too.
would
It's
love to
on,
have one.
it's on a, it's on a multi-month back order. So a very, very popular product.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I do believe the time is around 685,000 or there or thereabouts. So at the one-third point, of the bull cycle will be block 700,000.
Okay.
So we got a halving every 210,000 blocks. So a third of the blocks, 70,000, and the last halving was at block 630,000.
Yeah.
So I'm saying at 130 into the bull cycle, so one third into the bull cycle, will be at 70,000 US.
Okay, got you. You know, there will come a time, you know, we never had a money with absolute scarcity and with the magic sauces of difficulty adjustment and halvings and, you know, and supply shocks and, you know, with an ever increasing demand, the supply gets, you know, less and less and less. And so it's absolute scarcity. So it's never been done. So when do you think, you know, we're finally gonna go off this mindset of thinking in fiat terms? Like just thinking in purchasing power. I think there will come a time, whether it's in 5 years, in 10 or 15 years, it doesn't matter at what price Bitcoin is gonna be. It could be at, you know, 10 million or 1 million or 20 million, it doesn't matter. I think people need to really readjust their thinking. It's in purchasing power.
If we can get 3% of the world's adult or working population, mm-hmm. just 3%, doing $10 a day, like that's enough. Bitcoin will be 5 to 10 million each.
Yeah, but in purchasing power, it could be exponentially more. You know, this is, I think we have to change our mindset.
Put it this way: so 3% of like the, you know, working adults would be, you know, 100 to 150 million people. At $10 a day, that's $1.5 billion a year. Uh-huh. Sorry, a day, uh-huh. Going into Bitcoin. So that's $500 billion a year going in. So yeah, it'll be worth, you know, 1 million to 5 million each, and the other 97% will just have to learn.
Yeah, yeah, it's all a learning process.
So the trick is to get into that, the 3% that learns first.
Right.
Or learns that DCA is the way first, because that's basically it. So Bitcoin offers me a PPE stack, politics, philosophy, economics. Mm-hmm. So I just migrate to that PPE system, and I do that daily. So the more people just migrate to the system, like Bitcoin just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, as it gets, like, if you think, you know, people were excited about buying Bitcoin at 60,000, Wait till you see how excited they get to buy it at 600,000.
Yeah, it's a price that everybody deserves, you know.
Right, because it's going to 1 million, 600 grand to 1 million. That's right. So like, so auto DCA is the most important thing you can do for both yourself and for Bitcoin. If you get that steady stream of money coming in every single day relentlessly, the selling eventually runs out.
Yeah, and it's the most relaxing, you know, way of really investing and saving, investing into your own future, into your family's future, and into your own life, and just, you know, just auto DCA, just, you know, accumulate, you know, constantly, and eventually it will, you know, gradually and suddenly happen.
Just before we wrap up, I might add, when I first preached auto DCA, it was, I think, November 2018.
Yeah.
It was my first article on it. So forget November and December. Let's say you made a New Year's resolution and started on the 1st of January. Mm-hmm. 1st of January 2019 until 31st of December 2020. So in the two calendar years, 19 and 20, $10 a day got you one Bitcoin.
Right.
And that's what I said in my article. Like, a lot of people, like, you feel like you're sufferers now, but I promise you, even $10 a day. And like, I hope a lot of people took me up on my offer and my promise that, like, it's just $10 a day and you'll have a full Bitcoin. Probably not anymore. That time's gone now.
It's still
a good amount of Bitcoin you'll be saving up for just $10 a day.
Yeah, with a reservation. I mean, you know, the average family, the average household in Western countries, definitely. I think $10 for a lot of people in other countries is a huge, lots of money. But let's just say, you know, Europe, Canada, USA, like Western countries, you know.
So OECD average daily salary, average weekly salary is 770 US,
Yeah.
which is whatever is 110 bucks a day, or sorry, 770 a week. Yeah, 110 bucks a day is like average salary. So yeah, 10 bucks would be like you know, on the larger side, but the OECD is like it consists, I think, of something like, you know,
Yeah, they
50
can
or
afford it,
60
definitely.
countries. So you know, the top 20 OECD, like their average weekly wage is you know, up closer to, you know, 900 to 1,000 a week. So you know, 70 bucks a week on Bitcoin, it's not that much of a you know, yearly budget, you know, for the average man. But for like a lot of people that are in Google and currently working as software engineers at these big companies making 150, 180 grand a year, like 10 bucks a day is the absolute minimum charity you can contribute to propping up the Bitcoin price floor. And if you know what's good for yourself, you should be pumping in 100, 200 bucks a day, you know, at that wage. But
And
I tell
as you said,
people
you
that
know,
can.
it just needs like 2, 3, 4% of the world's population. It's really a really low critical mass of people.
So that's about it. That's
Yeah.
about it for me.
Get yourself a studio microphone, Hess, for next time.
Yeah, I'll have
Because
to.
your
I'll have
voice
to.
is really dampened.
I thought these AirPods would do a good job. They usually do.
Yeah, it's pretty dampened. I hope my listener's not gonna complain, because usually my listeners complain, but you know, that's why I got this microphone and everything set up. So has any final thoughts, or where can people find you? Any other resources, links coming up, articles?
All right, so people can find me on Twitter at Friar Hass, and you can also you can visit my author page on Bitcoin Magazine. I'll be doing a lot of writing for them over the next several months, mostly around this topic, energy and also the PPE stack. So get more into the cosmic side of philosophy as well.
Awesome. Hey, bro, hope we can, you know, meet each other again in person. Hopefully, you know, wherever.
One of these days.
Yeah, I couldn't even make it, you know, to the conference in Miami. You know, it's a lot of so many obstacles, but yeah, we might see each other in Europe or somewhere on at a conference in the future.
Absolutely.
Okay,
But until then, we got to keep it digital.
yeah. Okay, yes. Take care. Have a
You
great
too.
day. Yeah. Talk to you
You
soon.
too.
Thanks so much.
Gotcha.
Enjoyed this.
So, how'd you guys enjoy this fascinating episode with Hess McCook? Make sure you follow him on Twitter. Read his article, his brilliant dissecting, analyzing article, breaking down Elon Musk's misunderstanding about Bitcoin. Future articles coming on the military-industrial complex. And you know, I think if Dwight D. Eisenhower were alive today, he would probably not only warn about the military-industrial complex, but about, you know, warn you about the CO2 climate change hysterical, you know, industrial complex. So, you know, a huge scientific fraud. It's being ongoing, which, you know, every year there's $1 trillion spent on this carbon credit scam hoax. It's a fake. You know, it's all about, you know, just look at the incentives, just look at the, you know, controlling and power structures, the fiat centralizing structures. This all goes back to money. You know, that's why we need to fix the money. So make sure you follow Hess McCook and let me know your questions. I'm hoping we can repeat these talks, hopefully with a professional microphone. The sound wasn't that you know, perfect, but I'm sure Hess McCook gonna get his professional mic for his next interviews. And let me know if you have any questions for suggestions for future talks. My DMs are open. And subscribe please to my YouTube channel and podcast platforms. And if you love any of my episodes, just leave a 5-star review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or any kinds of comments or reviews. Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.